You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
From the rolling bluffs of the Driftless region to the pristine shorelines of Superior in Michigan, from the Northwoods to the Kettle Moraine, Civic Media broadcasts across all of Wisconsin. For all of Wisconsin. Take a trip with us across the radio network to hear from communities throughout the state. This is the Civic Media Spotlight.
Hello and welcome to this special best of edition of the Civic Media Spotlight. We start off with Mornings with Pat Kreitlow. Pat sits down with power couple Joseph Becky and Melissa Baldoff to talk about their year and the year in politics in Wisconsin. They look ahead to how to move forward as Democrats try to go for the trifecta in 2026.
All right, time for one of my favorite end-of-the-year events when I finally get to sit down and talk to Melissa Baldoff and Joseph Becky together about the year in politics and the year of being just another typical Wisconsin power couple involved in politics and, you know, the highs and lows of the year. Melissa and Joe, how are you guys?
Doing okay. How about you?
Well, you know, it's been a year, right, Joe?
Yeah, I'd say I'm looking forward to this year being over.
Yes.
But yeah. Then I realize that it's going to get worse before it gets better in 2026.
Yeah. But that's the adventure. That's why we do what we do here. It's why we have moments like this annual interview, which is the closest I get to like a West Wing moment, is to have the both of you talking about your year. And so let's go first beyond the radio appearances and beyond the big headlines, and let's just, you know, talk about your year, the highs and lows, because this is really the only time we really talk about the other things that you do, the clients that you have, the issues that you tackle. Joe, we'll start with you, because we do hear a little bit more, because we do bring up Protect Our Care now and then. But, you know, so either from that or anything else, how would you describe 2025 from your standpoint?
Well, I do think the biggest thing that happened for me professionally this year was my run to be state party chair.
Absolutely.
Which feels like it was about 1,000 years ago.
Yes, it does.
So in the middle of April, I announced my intention to run to be the next chair of the Democratic Party of Wisconsin. And that campaign lasted 2 incredible months. The convention and the election was June 15th in Wisconsin Dells. Came up a little short to current WISDEMS party chair Devin Remiker. And I will just say that it was more a great experience than it was a not great experience. Mm-hmm. And even knowing how it all turned out, I would do it again in a heartbeat. It was wonderful to get out around the state and meet so many folks and reconnect with folks I hadn't maybe worked with so closely in recent history. Learned a lot, and I think it has really informed where I believe we're going to end up next year, which is a really energized Democratic Party.
And you know, there is just something about getting out on the road. We talk to people all the time. There's a lot of emails back and forth. But when you have a reason to be on the road the way that you were, as I was in my campaigns, it's just downright exhilarating and encouraging. Not that it's not always like that. Don't get me wrong. But I could really hear it in you during those 2 months. And Melissa, I could hear the support for it in you. Again, talking to people about the future of the state Democratic Party. How would you describe it as an adventure?
It was a wild ride. It was a lot of fun. And I am very happy for Joe to be the candidate in our family from, you know, now and evermore. You know, having run for office and held local office, which I greatly, greatly enjoyed and loved serving our community. It's not for me in the same way as it is for Joe. He took to it so naturally and really thrived on getting around the state, building those relationships. It just, you know, his social battery is incredible. I think he actually got strength from people instead of being zapped by all the conversations, the way it wears a lot of us out. So it was really wonderful to watch and see that. And it was also great to see all these people, you know, hear from, you know, the person I love and think is a super smart, amazing brain for this kind of work, and seeing other people agree and like fall in love in a different way, I hope. But, you know, there are people that we met along the way that would like walk through fire for Joe because they believe his passion and, you know, his vision for what our party and our democracy and this movement needs to look like. So that was really, I really enjoyed getting to be a part of that and to see that. And like I said, I'm happy for him to be the candidate. I think I was an excellent candidate spouse.
Absolutely.
The very best.
Yes. Some are saying the very best.
Some are saying.
And I really enjoyed the process, you know, similar to how Joe described it, even knowing how it turned out, it was still a really great, great experience.
And it's very true. Like you said, those of us who do love him differently than you, but it's still there nonetheless. Enough about him. Let's hear about your year, 2025, from a political work standpoint.
Yeah. So for me, I really spent a lot of my time and a lot of my efforts this year staying in the climate and clean energy space, which I really love. And I've grown in this work and learned so much more than I ever thought I would, and have just found myself, you know, that's not exclusively what I do, but that's become a good bit of what I do. And I always appreciate the chance to chat about it with you. And we've had our climate chats and to get out on the road and doing this work too, in a different kind of way. But working with Forward Together Wisconsin, you know, we put on a number of different convenings and gatherings around the state. And it was really fascinating and inspiring to see what different communities are working on, you know, everyone from, you know, school districts, you know, like up in Menasha, where we've got the nation's largest net zero middle school, to the Winding River Library System, to, you know, what the Menominee are doing. And there's just folks all over the state who are taking action, some of whom, you know, were able to get tax credits and get some really big rebate checks, like, you know, some seven-figure checks in some cases, and some who, you know, with the bad news of gutting most of the Inflation Reduction Act, you know, there are communities and organizations that aren't going to be able to receive those tax credits, but they still recognize that clean energy is the future and it's the right thing to do, and it's going to save them money in other ways too. And so they're moving forward with projects. So that's really been cool for me to see how folks are doing at different places, and that they're not stopping just because some of those tax credits are, you know, sunsetting early, they're being phased out, they're cut completely already. These people are saying, hey, you know what, like, this makes good sense anyway, so we're going to stick to it because we know we need more energy. And you know, clean energy is the cheapest and the fastest to deploy.
Melissa Baldoff is with us along with Joe Zepecki, looking back at 2025 here. And look, we're going to end on a hopeful note, but we can't hide the fact that 2025 was a very craptastic year. And Melissa, you laid out some of the ways, some of the cutbacks. Joe, you and I have talked a lot about the higher costs for health insurance as a result, all the looming cuts that are coming from the big bloated boondoggle. And so now that we've acknowledged that there were just a lot of rotten things about 2025, Joe, I'll start with you. You know, what's the way forward? I mean, the easy thing is to say, get everybody to turn out next November. But between now and then, what is it that has to go right for not just the candidates, but the people who want to vote for them come November? What should we all be doing?
We have to continue to take action. And that looks different depending on who you are and how much power you have. But everybody has a role to play. When we're talking, it looks like there will be no deal on extending these Affordable Care Act tax credits. That doesn't mean we should stop fighting for them. It doesn't mean that if we get some kind of patch in January or February or March, that healthcare is suddenly going to be great for everybody. But it's going to provide some real relief to families across Wisconsin and across the country. And that means it's worth fighting for. And it's worth fighting for a continued streak of representatives on Wisconsin's state Supreme Court who value our democracy and the rule of law and are supported by those who do. And it's going to matter that we have a great field of candidates for governor on the Democratic side that are going to allow people to find something to believe in and advocate for and become a part of making change in that primary campaign. And then when we have a nominee, everybody getting on the same team and running through the tape next fall to not just win the governor's office again, but to finally realize something that's been 15 years in the making, which is a legislature that works for the people of Wisconsin and will enact policies that reflect what people want to see, whether that is expanding badger care, raising the minimum wage, actually investing in our schools for the first time in way too long. There is a real opportunity like Wisconsin has not had in a very long time in 2026. And whether you can write a big check to support a candidate, whether you can give your time and talent to a candidate, whether you can advocate and use your voice by calling your members of Congress or going to the next No Kings Day protest or chipping in $3 to a candidate who you really believe in. We all can do something. And that is what gives me hope going into next year, is there are going to be so many ways that people can be involved.
Melissa, when we've been talking over at Courier Newsroom about what are we going to focus on in 2026, a lot of the discussion has been it's going to be less about now persuasion of trying to, you know, win arguments and more about to the people that already understand that things are bad. Do something. Get up off the couch. And I don't say that in a chiding way, but what I'm saying is you and Joe and everybody else knows that if we can motivate anybody to be more active than they ever have been, there's no shortage of things to do. I mean, you could start at your local county party, for example, but there are so many ways that people can just do something next year.
Yeah, and it can be those really small things, even, and it doesn't have to feel like political work. People can just make it part of, you know, how they live and how they show up in their community with their friends, with their family. Joe and I were just at a Christmas party with our dear friends who are family, and we were checking in with the young people, a couple of whom have moved since they last voted. So it's all right. Well, we got, you know, and let's not everybody forget, we've got an election coming up in the spring before next fall. That's going to be very important. So we're checking in with the young people in our lives, the people who maybe don't vote every single time, the people who, and because look, like I get it, right? You know, like for a lot of people, it is not top of mind for them every day what's happening politically. I mean, it is top of mind every day, the impacts of the politics, because they know that the electric bill is higher because of Donald Trump. They know that their grocery bill is higher. They know that, you know, if somebody is out of work for a while, that might make the difference on whether they can afford their rent or mortgage or not. They're looking for childcare. They are worried about the future for their kids, for their parents that they might care for. So they feel the impact of the politics, but they just might not think about the politics. And having conversations with those people in our lives is so, so important to remind them, you do have a voice, you do have a say, you do get to have, you know, impact what happens, but make sure you show up and help them find resources. It's, you know, like you said, it's not just about the persuasion, but it's, you know, kind of persuading them to look into things a little bit deeper and help them understand why, for some folks, things are happening the way they are, and then helping them, you know, show up in their community and, you know, take part in the process.
And it's fun to watch people when they connect the dots and they realize, hey, there is more that I can do, and that this isn't something that I'm not capable of doing. I can do a little volunteer work. I can write the check, Joe, like you said, and anything that, you know, we can all do to get more people involved in 2026, all the better. Melissa Baldoff, Joe Zepecki, you know how much I have loved these visits. Thank you so much. Have a great holiday season, and I can't wait to see how we get connected in the new year.
You as well, my friend. Yep. It's been great.
Thank you so much. We will be back right after this. I'm Pat Kreitlow. This is the Civic Media Radio Network.
Mornings with Pat Kreitlow is affiliated with the Civic Media Radio Network and airs on select Civic Media stations weekday mornings from 6 until 9. To learn more about this show and all of the Civic Media programming, check out the website at civicmedia.us/shows.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
Up next on this special best of edition of the Civic Media Spotlight, we talk with John and Gordy. In this segment, John and Gordy talk with Mike McCabe, author of Miracles Across County Q, as well as an executive director of the Wisconsin Democracy Campaign, about farmers losing their labor force because of immigration due to the ag bill. They mention how many farmers are filing for bankruptcy and the reasons behind the madness.
Gotta get on that good foot one of these days. WMDX, it's John and Gordy in the morning. A beautiful day in Madison, the capital city, a block away from the Capitol on State Street. Visit us sometimes if you can.
Mm-hmm. It's hazy out there today. Highs in the mid-80s, 752. Back for a few more minutes here with Mike McCabe.
We've got a text here from Megan in Sun Prairie. Boomers may have made some wonderful changes to the world, but they also pulled the ladder up behind them. That's the issue. Newer generations can't get a word in edgewise, and they've lost all hope and being able to do so. And, you know, I see that all the time, and we're hearing about that all the time, that, you know, they did, many pulled up that ladder behind them, and generations now are having a very difficult time buying homes, getting cars, being able to afford, you know, an apartment.
It's beyond them.
Yeah. Even a steady job.
Right.
It's the gig, you know, economy now.
No question, you know, the boomers brought about a lot of social change, a lot of social equality.
Yeah.
Didn't do so well on economic equality. And I guess I wouldn't say that the boomers all pulled the ladder up behind them.
Right.
But they allowed the ladder to be pulled up behind them. Yeah. You know, a few at the very top did the pulling.
Yeah.
The billionaire class. They did the pulling. But the baby boom generation didn't do a good enough job of preventing that. And so economic equality was not one among the boomers' great achievements. And now we have really grotesque economic inequality in this country.
That's right. You talked about Adam Smith, the invisible hand of capitalism. Why?
Yeah, that invisible hand keeps giving us all the finger.
Yes, it does. Mm. And in relation to the ag bill that is kind of in limbo forever at this point, no one's bringing it up. I'm surprised that farmers throughout the country aren't angry and bitter about this. I mean, they're losing their labor force because of immigration, and now the ag bill is completely invisible to this administration.
They're
not talking about it at all.
They're a little distracted while they're filing bankruptcy.
Yeah.
People probably haven't heard, but there has been a recent spike in farm bankruptcies in this country, a pretty dramatic percentage increase.
Wow.
And that's on top of what happened over the past several decades, where 4 million farmers were put out of business by changing U.S. agriculture policy. Four million farmers were put out of business.
Yeah, we always talk about the 500 farms that were going out of business in Wisconsin.
The thing that aggravates me, coming from a farming background, is that so often people say, well, farmers just weren't farming smart enough, or they couldn't compete, or they kind of blamed the farmers, when in fact it was really savage policy that put them out of business. And you know, I write about the contrast between the U.S. farm economy and the Canadian farm economy.
Yeah.
In Canada, farm bankruptcies are so rare that they don't even measure them anymore, because they don't even have an ongoing statistic for them, because they are so exceedingly rare. And here it's something of an epidemic. And it's because they have a sensible supply management system that we used to have that kept our farm economy stable and kept those 4 million farmers in business.
Why did that go away?
Yeah, why?
Because big agribusiness wanted it to go away. They wanted fewer farmers who were operating on a much bigger scale, who were dependent on them for seed, for chemical fertilizers, for chemical pesticides. And they also wanted a glut. They wanted to subsidize overproduction. So we went from modulating the food supply to keep farmers in business and keep prices reasonable for consumers. Mm-hmm. That's what Canada does to this day.
Yes.
We went to a system that still subsidizes. They marketed it as, let's wean farmers from government assistance. Let's wean them from subsidies. Farming is as heavily subsidized today as it ever has been, but that now they subsidize overproduction because they wanted a glut of corn and soybeans so that they could then turn to turning some of that into things like fuel and sweeteners,
mm-hmm.
yes. high fructose corn syrup, right?
Thank you, Boomer. Thanks for that.
They consciously wanted that glut, and they also wanted that glut so they could dump cheap food on foreign markets and commandeer their farm economies.
Yeah.
And they put foreign countries' farm economies on ice and put a whole bunch of people out of business there so that they could take over those markets and become supermarket to the world.
Well, I have to interject
That was
here.
Conscious policy.
I'm wondering exactly what the tariff policies are doing as far as, you know, our commodities going over there tariff free. Are we going to disrupt their markets?
We've been disrupting their markets.
Even more so.
Yeah.
They were protecting their markets. Right. I don't know if those protections have gone down or been taken away through the EU agreement that they have for tariffs. I don't know that. I can't believe that no one's writing about that.
Right.
Because every market has to protect their farmers, their economies, and they rely on them.
Yeah,
we can't let down. I mean, we can't let them down.
Flood
their market.
In public policy, we let the Monsantos of the world, the ADMs, the Cargills, we let them dictate agricultural policy.
Yeah.
And we're now reaping that harvest.
Yeah.
And it's a bitter harvest because we've got 4 million farmers who've been put out of business. We still are seeing a surge in farm bankruptcies to this day.
Mm.
And we had a system that yielded an abundance of wholesome food at reasonable prices and kept farmers in business, and we abandoned that system.
Right. Those days are gone. Oh, boy.
But they could come back because they're there in Canada today.
They are.
And farm suicides are almost non-existent there, and it's a big problem here.
Mike McKay, we got to leave it there. Thanks for joining us. Stephanie Miller is coming up next.
It's a problem everybody's ignoring, and we shouldn't. We should focus on this.
Just look north.
Yes. There we go. On our next show tomorrow, we'll welcome back Tim Slecker talking about education. Also, Jim Sandell with some attorney advice for us.
Legal stuff.
Legal stuff. It's all coming up tomorrow. We hope you have a great day. So long. As we were saying.
The John and Gordy Show is part of the Civic Media Radio Network and airs on WMDX weekday mornings from 6 until 8. To learn more about this show and all of the Civic Media programming, check out the website at civicmedia.us/shows.
Next up on the Civic Media Spotlight, we have Max Inc. Radio Music Show co-host Terry Barr, who has an exclusive interview with singer-songwriter Kirsty Kross. The Janesville native is back from her second tour of England, plus Kirsty shares how she is already collaborating with some of the best musicians in Nashville for 2026, and why she thinks you may enjoy her new version of an old Christmas classic.
He was acting tough, found he was hot stuff, and my girls wrote him off, but he was cracking me up with his trashy jokes and his big old smile, so I decided to stay for a while.
Oh, she was looking cute, just sitting there. She was smiling up at me with a flower in her hair.
I knew I was done as a setting sun. First day in my bed, one. So I gave her my number.
And I called you up.
And 20 years later, we're still in love. We were hanging in August, sipping collage, living our lives like there was no.
Some TV show. Yeah, we started out forever. Started out forever in Largo.
That is the song Largo. And that sweet voice you are hearing is Kirsty Kross. Kirsty is Wisconsin's own. Yes, Kirsty, I'm still claiming you as Wisconsin's own. But she is based in Nashville, and she is here to talk with us. Thank you so much, Kirsty, for taking time. How are you?
I'm doing so good. I'm in Nashville right now, but going up, you know, for the holidays, and I'm really excited about it. Just to be in Wisconsin, because I'm automatically like, ah. So even though I spend, you know, a lot of time down in Florida, the Gulf Coast, and ended up writing Largo about that, you know, and exploring beach country and exploring a song like that with my friend Mike Nash, like how cool that he wanted to write and record a song with me. And I was like, hell yeah, I love a good collaboration. So we went for it, and it was really fun to write. It was a long time coming to put together, but I'm just really grateful with how it turned out, and I'm glad I like stuck to my gut and like redid the guitars and kind of tweaked things here and there, and I wanted it to be a certain way, and it seemed to have worked out. It's gotten a great response.
It has already received some accolades. What can you tell us about that?
I went to the Opry. I went to the Josie Music Awards this year, and Largo was up for Vocal Event of the Year. Right before the award came up, I was like, say Largo. And they were like, Largo. And I was like, woo. And so I ran and hightailed it down to the Opry stage and got to collect that award and put it on my mantle. And I texted Mike right away, and he was floored. He's from Nashville originally, and now lives in Knoxville. I feel like we took it. We took it home. And that song also won Radio Trap Rock Song of the Year, which is a radio station that just celebrates so much of the beach country and tropical music, and stemmed all from Jimmy Buffett himself. It's so cool to be a back-to-back winner for Song of the Year.
Yeah. What is it like to walk on that stage? I mean, it's a place I'm sure so many people dream of.
It's really cool. I definitely like to just in general carry myself with class. But when you step on that stage, there's like another level. All the cells in your body, you just want to like live up to all the people that have stepped on that stage. So maybe you're like, shoulders get a little higher. You get, you know, you just, you're beaming. It's hard not to beam from every single cell in your body when you're there. It's amazing.
You know, it's so funny because we started out by talking about Wisconsin and how you are coming home for the holidays. I love that you have so embraced Nashville. Nashville has embraced you. But why do you think it's important so you never forget where you actually came from?
I think hands down, the first thing that came to mind is just the OGs. I call them the OGs, the OG Thirsties. When I was still like figuring out, before I even put a record together and came to Nashville and started working my debut album, like those were the people that were out at shows as I was figuring out what my sound was. I feel like automatically they're family. We go way back. When I come up to any festival up there and see their faces and they're wearing the t-shirts from the original days, I want to cry. I can't help it. Like I get so appreciative and excited because they've been with me.
Support means so much.
Absolutely.
Okay. Talking about support, you just had a great trip to the UK for some shows. Tell us about that.
That was insane just to be asked to go to the UK. It's been a goal of mine, really kind of sprung about in 2020. I mean, before that, I always knew that I wanted to be an artist that traveled, like music allowed me to travel. So 2020 came about and I was like, all right, I'm gonna not book shows. I'm gonna reach out to people and I'm just gonna introduce myself and see if they wanna do interviews or takeovers or anything, write with people across the seas. And I feel like that work really planted seeds. And now I was looking at a third trip. It was Adam from Rock Bottoms Promotions that called me up and was like, hey, I think you would be great to come over and sing in this 1800s theater in Halifax. And I didn't know where Halifax was, but he was like, I would love for you to sing like some Stevie Nicks parts, some Roy Orbison songs. And basically we're doing a whole concert that's celebrating the Traveling Wilburys, the super group, this amazing group of musicians that got together and somehow all the stars aligned for them to just get together and create. So I, you know, dove in and I was like, oh my gosh, yes, I would love to sing these songs. How do I make them my version? And he's like, that's the thing. I want you to do your thing with these songs. I was just very honored to be asked. And he didn't want me to, you know, cover the songs. He wanted me to do my version.
Oh, I love that.
They were excited to have me. And I was like the only Nashville artist that came over to be a part of the lineup. Still, as I say this out loud to you, I'm definitely trying to take in moments just where I sat down, wrote things down, really grateful for that experience. Something I will never forget.
Well, you moved to Nashville a while ago now. I don't know where the time has gone. But when you think about your time there, and as we're talking about these wonderful opportunities and awards, what would you say about happiness, about how your career is progressing?
Just to kind of piece by piece tackle that question, I definitely moved to town and I was like, I'm going to write with everybody. You know, I'm going to say yes to everything. You just learn. You learn like what your lane is, how you work, who you're going to work best with. So I think as I've been here, I've gotten to write with more and more people and collaborate with more and more people who do have their own accolades and their own cuts, you know, whether that's songwriting accolades or whatever. I was at RCA today writing with a hit songwriter, and it was just so much, you know, sometimes I pause and I'm like, this is super cool that I'm here. You know, a lot of those type of people you don't get to until you've proven that you're going to stay in Nashville. And not only are you going to stay by living there, but you're going to stay doing this music. You're not going to just up and leave one day, because they're investing their time and their talents and resources into you. So I definitely think that being here, I've proven that I'm not going anywhere, and this is the lane I'm doing, and I'm going to do it at this type of level and try to always grow from there. And I think I've definitely carved out, it's weird to say this, but I'll just say it. I've definitely carved out a reputation that I work hard and I'm going to do this. And when I say I'm going to do something, I'm going to do it. Yeah. And that really does add up. That really does go a long way with people.
And I'm sure people talk, you know?
So, oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
If you work with Kirsty, you are getting a hard worker, and she is just going to make things happen.
Absolutely. And I've been lucky to have people share that they've said these kind of things or said these things amongst other circles, and someone passed it on to me. And that makes me like beside myself. I just like, that's awesome. I want that. I definitely want people to feel comfortable putting their talents and resources into me.
Agreed. I am talking with Kirsty Krause. She's a singer, songwriter based in Nashville, but again, Wisconsin's own. Thank you for that. Anything you can tell us about what you might be working on next?
I always love a good collaboration.
Yeah. So, oh, and you've got some good ones.
My future. I have 7 under my belt now. Mm. I feel like once I got really comfortable with my sound, I was like, ooh, now let's add another artist in the mix, write with them, and like, how does that sound meld together? And so that's been super fun. So I definitely can promise more collaborations. I'm also in the studio with Mike Loudermilk, a legend on the guitar, played with Crystal Gale. So we have a fun treat that will be coming out in 2026. I'm so excited for that song. I felt it since the day we wrote it. So that's going to be really fun. I can just promise more music on the way. I'm definitely anchoring down into the heart of Nashville to work on more stuff. And I'm really excited about it.
Well, one song collab that you just put out for the holidays, is this your first holiday song, Tropic Wonderland?
Totally is.
It is so much fun. What can you tell me about this song?
Mark and I wanted to write another song, and he was like, how about a Christmas song? I was like, of course. I mean, tropical beach theme on a Christmas song. And we're kind of just like shouting out ideas, texting back and forth. And we landed on, how about a spin on a winter wonderland and make it Tropic Wonderland? The idea was for it to be fun and silly, but obviously feel still classic. And Mark has that great old school type Christmas voice.
He does.
Yeah. Which is so perfect. his voice can sound like that classic. He's so great. So we got in the studio together. I'm just really appreciative to have a Christmas song out.
We're going to leave on that note. But before we do, what's the best way for people to keep up with you?
If you like Facebook, go there. If you're an Instagram person, join me on there. TikTok, all the places. Of course, all my music is up everywhere. You get music and also on the radio right now, which is so cool.
Kirsty Krause. And we are going to end here as I say goodbye to you and happy holidays with Tropic Wonderland. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you so much as well, Terry. It's always a pleasure. And I just appreciate you so much. And Merry Christmas, everybody.
Here it is, Tropic Wonderland by Kirsty Krause.
Sleigh bells ring. Are you listening? On the beach, Santa's glistening. A beautiful sight, we're happy tonight. Walking in a tropic wonderland. Gone away is the bluebird. Here to stay are the snowbirds. We'll sing a love song as we go along. Walking in a tropic wonderland. By the ocean we can build a salmon, then pretend pretend that he is Parson Brown. He'll say, are you married? We'll say, no, man. But you've been doing the job while you're in town. Later on, we'll perspire as we dream by the fire. So face unafraid the plans that we made, walking in a tropic wonderland. By the ocean we can build a sandman and pretend that he's a circus clown. We'll have lots of fun with Mr. Sandman until the other kids knock him down. When it's windy, ain't it thrilling? When we're surfing and a-chilling, we'll frolic and play the Kokomo way, walking in a trap.
Max Inc. Radio is Wisconsin's local music radio show, originating in Madison and featuring music, interviews, performances, and premieres of Wisconsin artists. You can listen to them every Saturday from 6 to 9 p.m. and listen to music made right here in Wisconsin.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
We stay right here on the Civic Media Spotlight with John and Gordy from the Afternoons with John and Gordy. The guys continue their conversation with Mike McCabe about Mike's Substack article called Looking the Wrong Way.
And hey, across the nation.
It's Afternoons with John and Gordy. Our special guest, Mike McCabe from Substack.
Coming up in about 15 minutes, we're going to check in with Earl Ingram. He interviewed Mandela Barnes, and we're going to talk to him about that interview and have some cuts from that interview coming up in our 4 o'clock hour. Back with Mike McCabe, and you can give us a call if you'd like to ask any questions or make any comments, 855-752-4842.
See, my idea is coming up with Mission 2029, and then we come up with a whole bunch of ideas, but it has to be at a think tank of some sort, a liberal think tank, so we can disavow, as a party, we can disavow the entire agenda and say, no, no, we're not doing any of that stuff. Everybody becomes very familiar with Mission 2029, and then we just spring it on everybody. Oh, wait, that's what happened with Project 2025.
Yeah, that's right.
Oh, yeah. But why don't we do that then, you know?
This is the Peterson plan.
Yeah, this is the Peterson. You know, I'm just plotting
How about just summoning the courage to do two or three really big things and actually fight for it?
Yes.
Okay, there you go. All right.
How about that?
Okay, so it would be universal health care, right? That would be the one.
And, you think that's a big one?
That's a gigantic one.
It's a huge one. I think that'll just move the country forward instantly.
What else would we pick?
Everybody has a gas stove that uses little gas.
I think you got to do something big on technology and AI and protecting
guardrails. Everybody wants guardrails.
Protecting people from machines.
Yes,
and I think you also got to deal with the fact that. That families, child care is a huge issue in this country. Health care and child care and protecting people from machines. You know, those would be three really big undertakings that our country has been punting on for years now.
You do know you just said protecting people from machines.
Well,
kind of stands out.
To me, the dividing line is whether or not you can bleed. These AI bots cannot bleed.
There you go.
And yet they are going to take over people's jobs and take away their ability to make their way in the world, and they're going to make all our decisions for us and do our thinking for us. But to me, if you bleed, you'd need protection from those bots. And we're not building any guardrails. We're not doing anything to try to deal with this AI in a way that puts puts it in service of humanity rather than humanity in service of the AI.
Well, we're seeing, you know, Republicans and Democrats getting together and saying we really should have some guidelines for
AI. You think?
Right. Before it gets out of control.
Right. And even the engineers, the godfathers of AI are warning people that if this is not consciously laid out in a way
added to AI
that protects humanity, you've got real problems.
The one guy said putting the mother instinct into AI, the guy who came up with it said, but, should have put some roadblock in.
Healthcare is an obvious one. Something big on healthcare is I saw polling recently that even Republicans now favor a Medicare for all system.
Yes. Mm-hmm. We had that poll on the air here. And, we talked about it.
And Democrats overwhelmingly independent, overwhelming support for it. But even Republicans favor a Medicare for all system. More Republicans think we should have it than not.
Isn't that crazy?
And yet the politicians listen to their donors, the insurance industry, instead of the voters.
Yeah.
And so that's an obvious one. But then you think about, families used to be people lived off the land. And then when the Industrial Revolution came along and people went to factories, still you had a breadwinner and then you had a homemaker at home.
Right.
Now every family's got to have two or three or four incomes to make ends meet. Everybody's got to work. And we've never really dealt with childcare in a rational way in our country. We've got a system that's 19th century in terms of how we care for children. But we don't live in that world anymore. What family has a sole breadwinner and then a homemaker to take care of the kids? Everybody's got to work.
Yeah.
Everybody's got to work, and we're not dealing with these big things. And hell, if you could just get people to fight for a few big things, our country could make some progress. And instead, we've got a government that's paralyzed.
Well, I do have a cut somewhere. I don't know where it is, but it has to do with that. And a Republican is complaining that what he wants to do and he wants to have, this is the big change that this Republican has and proposed the legislation for it, and that is to have school all year round. Mm. So the kids are taken care of while the parents are at work. I would call that babysitting or child care, but I don't call it education or schooling for that matter. So, and that's what they complained about during COVID. That's why they were so angry.
Yeah.
They had to stay home. They had to find some way to take care of their children, and they want their kids at school no matter what.
The reason we have summers off in school is because we used to be an agricultural society, and everybody worked on the land, and they needed the kids for harvest, to plant and then to harvest their crops. That's why there are summers off. We wouldn't design that same system. We'd give breaks over the course of the year here and there, but we wouldn't have entire summers off. And then we've got a K-12 education system because mom was always home to take care of the little ones. But we really should not have a K-12 system. We should have at least a P-14 system now,
right,
where it starts shortly after infancy.
Absolutely. Yes.
And continues for at least 2 years beyond high school. That's the education system we need.
There you go. That's the other big change.
Yep.
Okay. All right, Mike McCabe, thanks for joining us. We'll talk to you next Wednesday.
All right, next Wednesday it is.
Always appreciate it.
Calm down by that time.
we've got news next, and in our next hour we'll talk to Earl Ingram. It's all coming up on John and Gordy in the afternoon.
Listen to John and Gordy in the afternoon from 2 to 5 all over the Civic Media Network.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.